shall overcome. We shall overcome.
This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That is Bruce Springsteen performing Pete Seeger's classic, We Shall Overcome, which became synonymous with the civil rights movement. It was one of the many songs, a cover of a Pete Seeger song that appeared a couple of years ago on a double CD called Where Have All the Flowers Gone? The guy who put that project together is going to join me in just a moment. But first, I thought you'd like to hear what Springsteen himself had to say about Pete when he performed at Seeger's 90th birthday celebration 4 years ago at Madison Square Garden.
Well, as Pete and I traveled to Washington for President Obama's inaugural celebration, he told me the entire story of We Shall Overcome, how it moved from a labor movement song and with Pete's inspiration had been adopted by the civil rights movement. And that day as we sang This Land Is Your Land, I looked at Pete, the first black president of the United States was seated to his right. And I thought of the incredible journey that Pete had taken. You know, my own growing up in the 60s, town scarred by race rioting, made that moment nearly unbelievable. And Pete had 30 extra years of struggle and real activism on his belt. He was so happy that day. It was like, Pete, you outlasted the bastards, man.
Bruce Springsteen at Pete Seeger's 90th birthday celebration. So let's bring in now the founder and president of Appleseed Recordings, the label that Pete recorded about 10 albums on, Jim Musselman. Hi, Jim. Welcome to America Weekend.
Hi, and good morning, Paul.
And I'm so sorry for the loss of your friend and a guy who is kind of close to my family as well, because my mom used to go to Pete's apartment on McDougal Street in Greenwich Village in the 1940s and hang out with him and Lee Hayes and some of the others while they were having their hootenannies. So we've got a little bit of experience all the way back there myself. Tell me about your relationship with Pete.
Well, I had known Pete for years related to Sing Out magazine, and I had also worked in Washington, D.C. as an attorney with Ralph Nader for years, and Pete and I would work on environmental issues and issues dealing with the cleaning up of the Hudson River and everything. And then after discussions with Pete, I decided to start a record label called Appleseed because Pete loved to plant seeds in musicians' heads, but also plant seeds of hope in people around the world.
What was his influence?
It was on many levels. He showed that one person could truly make a difference in the world. One of my favorite Pete stories is he used to say, did anyone ever believe that Mandela would go from a prisoner to president of South Africa without a shot fired? And people would say no. And then he'd say, did people ever believe that Berlin Wall would come down without a shot being fired? And people would say no. And then he'd say, did people ever believe that there would be peace in Northern Ireland after all these years? And everyone says no. So Pete always said, well, don't believe that anything can't happen in the world, that there's always a sense of hope that anything can happen if people put their minds to it.
Did you have conversations with him about that role in the civil rights movement? And, you know, I mentioned We Shall Overcome.
Yes.
Became a huge part of that, and I know he marched with Dr. King. Did you talk to him about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely, and that, because Pete was at the front lines of every battle. I mean, he would go there, be it the anti-war movement or the civil rights movement, and he had actually taught Dr. King the song, and Pete really didn't, you know, take a lot of credit for, you know, what he did with the song. He changed it to, it was an old spiritual, and he changed it to We Shall Overcome, and he taught it to Dr. King, and Dr. King used it as the anthem of the civil rights movement.
He had some political problems of his own along the way. There was a famous time in 1955 when he was called to give testimony before the House Un-American Affairs Committee. It was during the McCarthy era. He very famously didn't want to name names or even talk about anything. I think he said, look, I'll sing you my songs and I'll tell you about the songs, but I'm not going to tell you the people I've sang them to, which I thought was such a great line. Tell me about that part of Pete's history that you know.
I think it's his greatest legacy because during the McCarthy era, everyone was pleading the Fifth Amendment, which was the right against self-incrimination. Pete went and said, the First Amendment, I'm an American and I get to sing or perform or hang out with whoever I want to hang out with. And He was sentenced to jail for contempt of Congress, and he actually went to jail for one day. And the funny story is, Pete was like, well, I went to jail for a day, but I got a good song out of it there.
He learned a song in jail?
Yes. So he looked at things in the optimistic way, but he had such guts to stand up and do what he did at that time, and that took a lot of intestinal fortitude and strength to do that.
Funny to hear him being, you know, told that he's in contempt of Congress, considering how much contempt we all have for Congress now. But that actually led to some really dark times for him, because he was blacklisted and kept off TV for a decade, right at the height of his career and of the Weavers' career, his group, right?
Yes, he had the number one song in the country with the Weavers, "Goodnight Irene," when they were blacklisted then afterwards. And so his songs like crept all over the world, despite the fact that he was kept off television for all of those years, and he couldn't perform certain concerts for all those years. So he decided to go and perform in front of kids and college students, and that's how he reached everybody for years.
Tell me a little bit about the more contemporary Pete Seeger, the last 10 or 15 years when you knew him. What was his life like?
I was shocked at his energy level. I mean, I would go chopping wood with him, and I'm in good shape and younger, and I would be exhausted. And, you know, when the Iraq War broke out, I called up Pete. I said, we have to do some songs in the recording studio. And, you know, we went up to the recording studio and did like 5 songs in a day, and I just was amazed at his energy. And we actually did an album with him 2 years ago called More Perfect Union that had Bruce Springsteen on it and Emmylou Harris, and it was amazing. He was still writing songs. He wrote a song called God is Counting on Us that Bruce sang on, and I was amazed at how he kept going and his vitality.
Yeah, you talk about him chopping wood. He actually built his own log cabin. I don't know anybody in modern times who could say that.
No, I know. He got him and his wife, Tosh, he got a book out of the public library, and they built the cabin, and it overlooks the Hudson River, and it was an absolutely beautiful place for him to live.
What did he think of people who were on the other side of the aisle from him politically? Occasionally, you know, we would have problems like the blacklist that we talked about earlier. But even in recent years, wouldn't he sometimes go places and there would be people protesting against his appearance?
Yes, but he always reached out to them. In fact, the person who prosecuted him during the blacklist, one of the people, he actually performed at a concert for the guy. I mean, he always felt that it's better to love your enemies and try to communicate with them and build a common bridge with them as opposed to hating them. And I think that's another legacy of his.
Take me back to the Vietnam era, if you would. And I actually went with my parents, who were very virulently anti-war, to a couple of the big rallies in Washington, D.C. on the Mall. And, of course, Pete was there singing. But he also would perform pretty much anywhere to speak out for that cause, wouldn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he basically was at the front lines against it, the Vietnam War, and as the same with the Iraq War, when a lot of people were not. And, you know, he put his guitar and his banjo right there at the forefront of the movement. His song, you know, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, became an anthem during the Vietnam era. And the song Bring Them Home about Vietnam, we rewrote the words, and it was used against the Iraq War. And Bruce Springsteen wrote more words and performed it in concert and recorded it also.
So with all of the stuff that he did, I mentioned that your company, Appleseed Recordings, made 10 albums with Pete. Was Pete Seeger good business?
No, I mean, from the standpoint of, you know, Pete was not one that, you know, never sold a lot of albums, but it was more about planting seeds, you know, like the seed that we planted with Bruce Springsteen, who ended up doing the Seeger Sessions album and everything, you know. But it was much deeper. It was about putting songs of hope and social justice out there. And, you know, the bottom line is that Pete's songs are always going to be out there. You know, Pete did not pass away. Nobody passes away until their vision and the people who were influenced by them are gone. So his songs are, you know, will pass on to other generations in social movements. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Jim Musselman, founder and president of Appleseed Recordings, Pete Seeger's label, who knew the man so well through those years. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
Now let's go back to that album, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, with Bruce Springsteen singing Pete's classic, We Shall Overcome.
We shall overcome.